formal mission of U Equals Me is stated as a movement of conscientious objectors to intolerance, or simply stated, a movement against intolerance. And the exploration of that statement really gets to what are the similarities between people? What do we all have in common? Why are we really equal as humankind? And that's what we're going to explore.
This podcast is about exploring conversational thoughts and interviews with extraordinary people living ordinary lives of well-being. Discussions on exactly what well-being means to people day to day, factors that can influence it both internally and externally. We glean insights on how to survive and thrive in feeling satisfied in life with a greater sense of purpose. Guest hosts bring fresh new outlooks and opinions from spirituality, science, worldviews, and standing up and speaking out for what's right.
It's pretty interesting. Man needs each other and planet Earth to survive. Check it out. I think you'll like what you hear.
Thank you. Okay, so we want to thank family and friends from around the world for listening today. And you know who you are. You know who you are in England, France, Italy, Portugal, Belgium, Australia, Ukraine, and Korea. I love our diversity. I'm Cindy Jarvis, your host today from the U Equals Me Foundation. And this foundation exists to influence public opinion on issues of equality, civil rights, or social action. And today I have the pleasure of interviewing Tracy and Steve Webster, the authors of the book, The Law of Creation. And a new book you have out, just out, is Learning to Fly. Welcome, Tracy.
Thank you.
So I did see on your website that Learning to Fly was currently downloadable as a gift. Is that right?
That's correct, yes.
Okay, fabulous. And it feels like it's a sequel to The Law of Creation.
Correct. So when we, Stephen wrote The Law of Creation, he did the manuscript. What are we now, 2022? He must have done it about 8 years ago. And he never published it until the beginning of 2020. He brought it out and he gave it to me to look at. The timing was perfect. Mm-hmm. It saved my life. And we then self-published it and I put my stamp of approval on it. I changed stuff up. I put in my voice and Steve said that I should put my name on the title. And I said to him, I can't do that. I didn't really write the book. He said, no, but you really have to because it's you. And so I thought about it and I thought, how can I remain in integrity and have my name on there without having felt like I should have my name on there? So I thought, gave it some thought, and I could recognize the benefit, not to myself, but to me being able to do what it is that was starting to materialize. I wanted to get a message out there and help people. I'd seen how my life could turn around 180 degrees, I wanted to facilitate that for other people, and having my name there meant that I could. So I thought to myself, all right, if I take everything we say in the Law of Creation and I put it into practice and I develop a stepping stone, a pathway to enlightenment or awakening, then I will feel I have got I'm authentically have my name on the title. So that's what I did. And we're learning to fly was part of that process. Mm-hmm. But right now we're busy writing a book together, another one. And that is going to have literally everything, because it's been a process now of 3 years. And finally, we're at a point where we have complete understanding, absolute understanding of everything that we say in the book. We term it knowing. Mm-hmm. There's a point of collecting knowledge. At some point, you've got to get to knowledge, from knowledge to knowing, because that's the whole point of accumulating knowledge, to know.
That's right.
Yes. And that's where we're at now. And the information that comes to us is just absolutely mind blowing. Mm-hmm.
You know, I can see that through the work of the book. It's there's a lot in this book, The Law of Creation. And it's years and years and years of studying and knowing. I can see that and feel that in the book. It's really fantastic. I loved it. In the book, The Law of Creation, you go into detail on using your consciousness and subconsciousness to create wealth and manifesting, you know, your heart's desires, happiness, joy. But also you go into why the secret works and why it doesn't work, why the law of attraction works, why it's not working for people. I thought that that was really fascinating. If it's all right with you, can we start there?
Absolutely.
How your thoughts are your creations. You are what you think.
Yes, absolutely. I'll say a little bit and then I'll hand over to Steve because he approaches it from a different perspective and he has more of the scientific brain, which speaks to often generally men. And I'm all about the story and my feelings. And
yeah.
So for me,
I just want to chip in there and say that the feeling is far more important than knowing stuff. So it's what you feel. That's how you create a manifest. That's how you create. And that's where poor left brain men like me are in a little bit of trouble when they try to do law of creation, because they're trying to do everything from a conscious left brain perspective, whereas it only really works with the subconscious right brain perspective. And a person that is so in tune with their emotions is way easier, has far more power in terms of manifesting and creating what they want.
So it's how you feel. It's not really, that's how you feel behind the thought.
So the 18th law is the law of vibration. And that for me should be law number one, really, or the law, because ultimately that's the language of the universe. So if you want to speak to the universe, you have to speak in the language of the universe. So in the Bible, it says, ask and you shall receive. But it doesn't tell you in the Bible what you should ask for or how you should ask for it.
Mm-hmm.
So that's open to interpretation. And that's ultimately what free will comes down to. So if we're going to speak in the language of the universe in vibration, we speak the language of the universe, its frequency, the language of frequency, and we speak it through our emotions. We mm-hmm. don't speak it in our heads and we don't speak it with words. It is a feeling. and that feeling interprets into the brain as a thought. When we pray, prayer works, mm-hmm. but not if you're saying, "Hey, God, please, can I have this, that, and the next thing?"
Please bring me a Mercedes.
Yes, because ultimately, why do you want the Mercedes? The Mercedes isn't why you want it. It's not for the car. Yes, there's an element of that, but it's not technically what it is. You've got to dive down deeper. And why do I want this beautiful, sparkly blue Mercedes with this leather trim and whatever? Because when you've got it, what do you think it's going to give you? It's going to make you some form of happy. So what form of happy? Is it going to make you feel like you're successful? Is it going to make you feel like you can get a spouse? is it going to make you feel hot and desirable? What is it going to give you? That's what you've got to get down to. And then that's what you've got to ask for. Mm-hmm. And then how you ask for it is by already feeling like you have it. And that's the hardest thing, because how can you have something you don't have? don't have it, which is the reason you want it. So it's like a catch-22 situation. But how will you feel when you have it? So you've got to understand what it brings you in the first place, why you want it. So therefore, you can get into the feeling of having it. And then you can have that feeling in the present moment. And that's how you put out a vibration, a frequency to the universe.
It's a match, a frequency match.
It's a magnet match. You track back what you're giving out. Mm-hmm. And so you've got to be giving out what it is that you want. So how do you do that?
So how do you do that?
Okay. So it's not an easy thing, as I found out over the last 3 years. You have to understand, our cats are they're giving us a hard time.
They're joining in. That's great.
So what you've got to do is you've got to understand your feelings. If you can just switch on the feeling that you feel like you have everything that you're asking for, great. But most of us can't. It's a process to do it. And what those feelings entail are what you believe. So you've got to get down to what do you believe. And most of us don't question that. If you think about your body updates itself. So daily, weekly, monthly, everything, every day, your cells are dying, and resurrecting themselves. So the cell dies, it resurrects itself, and it will resurrect itself with your blueprint. And your blueprint is your beliefs. It is what you think about everything. So you got to get down to what you believe. So what do you believe about money? So if you're wanting to manifest a car, what do you believe about money? I believe that money doesn't grow on trees. I believe that money is hard to get. I believe that whatever. You got to start looking at those and start looking and seeing if they still benefit you. Because when our bodies do an update, after 7 years, every single cell in our body between 7 and 10 years is no longer the same cell. Mm-hmm. It's completely regenerated and completely resurrected in a different and what was then no longer exists. But we never do that with our minds.
Mm-hmm.
Every time we believe something, we believe it because it's going to help us in the present moment. So we go through a divorce. We find our husband cheated on us. All men cheat becomes a belief. And right. Love hurts becomes our belief. 7 years later, when you're now healed and you're looking for a new relationship, you've got to go check and see if you've updated those beliefs.
Exactly.
Does love still hurt? And do all men still cheat? Because if you really believe that subconsciously, but you're not really going to get somebody that's going to come in and make you have a wonderful relationship. You're going to find somebody that's going to hurt you and mm-hmm. probably cheat.
I
understand what you're putting out, and those beliefs are what you're putting out.
I loved that in your book when you talk about deservability, you know, and worthiness, because that's a big part of the manifestation end of it. I thought that was really fascinating.
Give me some info on that quickly.
Oh, please, please.
So there's a thing called homeostasis. So I was fortunate enough to be a hypnotherapist for 4 years, and it provided a fascinating insight into the human mind and how the human mind works. And we all have a thing called homeostasis, which is the natural balance of what we believe we're worth. How is it that some people are billionaires and other people are living on the street? Mm-hmm. Because the billionaire believed he was worth that billion, and the homeless person just believed that bad luck and hard times was what he was deserved and what he was going to get. So you can, if you look at somebody that won the lotto, let's say they're really poor people, and then several years later, they've won the lotto, now 2 years later, 3 years later, they've got no money left. Mm-hmm. They've spent it all. Why? Because their natural homeostasis was to go to the belief level, the worthiness level of who they thought they were.
Or otherwise the script.
The yes. script, absolutely.
Yeah.
We all have a script, and we're only as good as the script. Whether you believe you can or you can't, you're absolutely right.
So
I think the book was, first of all, describing, well, what is the law of attraction stroke creation.
Right.
Why did the secret work? Why didn't it work? But then also to say, okay, well, now we know these things. How can I improve myself? How can I make it work for me? And obviously that's what we try to do. We've given a lot of info there where you can actually change your homeostasis.
Mm-hmm. There is a lot of info packed in this book. I had to go back and reread. I wanted to reread and make sure I understand. I love the science behind it. I love that, Tracy, I love that we're not just talking woo-woo. I love it because it's really difficult to have a conversation about these matters with many people, you know, that have this level of understanding without, you know, feeling judged or that the conversation is too threatening to somebody because they don't believe it. And I, in your book, you said that, you know, a lot of people require proof of the work, which we've all run into, you know, prove it to me, prove it to me. Well, now the scientists are proving it. They're proving the quantum physics, in the law of visualization or the photons, the double slit experience. That was really fascinating.
It's brilliant.
It is brilliant.
We would all have been considered absolute lunatics 100 years ago, but because of quantum physics and the discoveries they're making, now all of a sudden these things that we're saying are not as woo-woo, to use the word, as they were before. Mm-hmm. There is substance. Scientists are now saying that everything that seems real isn't, and everything that isn't seems real. It's just absolutely turned around. We've no idea who we are, what we are. If you take concepts like the space between matter, for instance, everything you're seeing is 99.99999% space, so much so that if you were to compress the whole Earth without any spaces whatsoever, you would have something the size of a tennis ball. That is absolutely mind-boggling.
Yeah, it's unimaginable. But in the quantum immortality, in that chapter, you say all possibilities exist, and then you also say all outcomes exist as well.
Everything exists.
Everything exists at the same time.
Yes, at the same time. So I can explain that.
Okay.
So if all possibilities are possible, how can that be? So if it all comes back to understanding energy, we are energy and everything is energy. So how does energy work? Energy cannot be created and it cannot be destroyed.
Right.
It can only change form. So then the mind starts working and I think, okay, so how can it not even be created? How can we have something that didn't create that always exists? Because it's infinite. It just always existed and it always will. And so you got to start taking your mind higher, and you've got to, I started doing it through scientific approaches where I do
a deja vu or?
Well, no, I scientifically tried to do it. I did it through a scientific process. Yeah, where I did an hypothesis. So I had to suspend belief that, okay, everything is energy and it's all an illusion. So I had to believe those things and say, okay, if this is true, then let's have a look at this, that, and the next thing. So I had to work from the end. So I had to seek and ye shall find. Mm-hmm. What are you seeking to understand? That's how we need to be looking at the universe. Mm-hmm. Not what we normally do. A person prefers to believe. How does the saying go by Francis Bacon?
A person chooses to believe to be true what he wants to be true.
Yeah. So what he prefers to be true.
Badly paraphrased.
So whatever we look for validation that what we believe about it is true. But mm-hmm. then you don't learn anything. So if you want to understand something you don't know, you've got to start looking to understand it. So you've got to suspend what you know and suspend what you believe in order to understand this. And you've got to approach it with the perspective of let's understand how it could be true. Mm-hmm. And that's how I came about. What question am I answering? That everything is energy and
possibility and outcomes, and everything everything is energy. And then you state in your book that the scientist Wheeler, was it John Wheeler?
Yes.
Concluded that the universe doesn't exist out there.
Right.
It exists in here. It's in your creation of it.
Correct. Right. It's your perspective of it.
Your perspective.
Everything looks to you the way you believe it looks to you. So everything happens the way you believe it happens. And everybody's walking around like that. So everybody's world, you exist in different formats in the minds of everybody you come in contact with.
Right.
So there's a version of you today. I will see you and I've met you today and I think of you this way. There will be somebody else that you work with that think of you different. Then there'll be your husband or a spouse that sees you in a different way. So there are hundreds of versions of us. How many people do we meet? Those many versions.
Mm-hmm.
And how many more? There's an infinite number of versions. So we're constantly changing and morphing, etc. I'm sorry, there's so much information in my head that I often...
There really is. There really is. But what I love about the universe exists in here is that now we have the power to... We can take back our power since we're the creative... We're creating our lives. We're creating our universe. We can take back that power. But you also write that it's important that you take it back without blame, judgment, shame.
Correct.
And the darker energies to clear this out so that you can recreate new neural pathways.
Correct.
Yeah, it's more than that, though. It's saying, hold on a moment. If I'm all powerful, and we all are, then I can't blame the government. I can't blame my neighbor. I can't blame my spouse because I've created that. For as long as I carry on that blame game, I'm putting my power outside of me. I'm believing that my happiness is due to outside factors. Meanwhile, I'm the only person responsible for my happiness. And to loop in what you were saying earlier about, well, all possibilities exist. They do. All we are is emitting and transceiving equipment.
Electromagnetic impulses.
And what we're doing is we are tuning into the frequency that exists. Why do they all exist? Look at we already said, look, if you look at quantum physics, the electron is in every position. It's superimposed. It is in every position. What makes it assume a position? Our observation of it. And life is exactly the same. So all of those opportunities, all of those possibilities exist out there. It's what level is your frequency? What are you tuning into and creating? And the universe is giving you that information back the same way that you are tuning out.
It reflects it back at you by everybody you meet, and everything you experience is your reflection. So it tells you something about yourself. Mm-hmm. So to get your own power, to take your power back, you cannot take it back if you're blaming somebody else. If you're in a position like this, that's where your power is, the person you're pointing a finger at. Mm-hmm. They now need to change in order for you to feel better. You are at their mercy, and there's no worse feeling in the world. And mm-hmm. we all go in, I call it victim mode, mm-hmm. and we all go into victim mode. In fact, it's our natural place to be, because when we get hurt so badly, you have no idea how to process that hurt. What do you do with that hurt? So we don't even understand the hurt, and we try, and so we bury it. That was I buried everything.
Bury it or blame.
Yeah, or blame. So one of the other ways is to blame. I read a book, Don Miguel Reis. The Mastery of Love. And he says it's the equivalent to everybody vomits their feelings and their stuff that hurts them. They'll vomit it over somebody else to feel better. And that's blame. That's blame. You're vomiting your pain over somebody else and mm-hmm. giving them your pain so that you can feel better. But you don't. But you don't wake up to that fact. You don't go, okay, I don't feel better. So now what?
Yeah.
Start becoming aware of your actions. And as soon as you can go, okay, I'm in control of this. How do I take control?
Right.
Absolutely. For me, it was the understanding that I am everything and everything comes from within me. So I have absolute control over what I do.
I have to go. Forgive me. I'll be back if I can.
Okay. Thank you, Steve.
I get to talk.
So, Tracy, I loved that you included this in the book, The Power of Words and Thought. We've talked a little bit about thought, but even as you say, words carry a vibration in itself, and colors and shapes. That's absolutely really very interesting to me. Go ahead.
I'm busy developing a course called I Am Divinely Guided, because our words are incredibly powerful, because we become what we say we are. So anything you follow after the words I am beautiful, I am ugly, I am smart, I am stupid, I am rich, I am poor, mm-hmm. becomes your state, your
reality.
Places, your reality. So what we say we are, we become. So we think that it's all connected, your thoughts, your thoughts, your words, your feelings, and your actions. You'll think something. We don't think that happens first, but it's the thought that happens first. But it happens so fast, and the emotion is there so quickly that we pick up on the emotion before we actually think, what was I thinking, et cetera, et cetera. When I suddenly feel something, I've gotten so tuned into how I feel that as soon as I feel like something's off, I stop and I go, okay, what gives? And then I'll check in, and there's either guilt or there's a feeling of I've done something wrong. There's the wrongness. And I think, okay, what went wrong? And I'll look for it. I feel it. And then I'll look and I'll go back into what did I just think before this happened? And I'll go, it was some old programming and it just came in I'm just so in tune to how I feel it, and I'll stop and I'll address it. And then I'll logically think, does that make any more sense? No. Okay. And I chuck it out. But, I apologize again.
No, I love it. I love it. You talk about, the work of Esther and Jerry Hicks and the vortex and the importance of being able to stop yourself, the importance to be able to stop the negative, spiral.
Yes.
So that's important.
First thing I put into place. It was the first thing. I did a whole bunch of Tony Robbins courses and all sorts of stuff.
Oh, yes. I saw that.
He got me thinking along those lines, and I thought to myself, okay, how can I start to be in control? And it was COVID, and my daughters had moved back in, and they each brought two animals with them. So we had three or four. We had three cats and two little dogs. So we had five animals, and they brought two animals each, two cats and two dogs. And we had a house full of adults and animals. It was crazy. It was like a zoo. And I was so grateful because, I mean, who gets the opportunity to have their adult daughters back home and get to know them as adults? It was wonderful.
It was wonderful.
It was also quite stressful with everything going on, and we're there 24/7 with each other, et cetera, et cetera. So I've always been a house proud person and a little bit OCD. Stephen won't say a little bit. And dishes in the sink would drive me insane. And I would come in here and I'd just clean the sink and I'd come back in and there'd be dishes in the sink. And it triggered me. And one day I thought, okay, come on, let's logically look at this. Is it a problem, the dishes in the sink? Well, no.
Yeah.
What gives? What is your problem?
Yes.
And I asked myself intelligent questions. Again, Tony Robbins. Everything comes down to the questions you ask yourself when you go, why me?
Yeah.
The stupid answer you're going to get is, why not you? What are you going to do with that answer? Nothing.
Yeah, that's interesting.
Intelligent questions. So and I asked, okay, yes, go ahead.
No, I was just going to say, in the book, you talk about Dr. Emoto's experiment. The power of the thought, the power of the words, and that he did in it. Can you talk about that experiment? You actually put a picture in the book, which I thought was so incredible. I've never seen that photo before.
Wow, it's amazing. So he took water and he froze it and he would get crystals, but he would put the water on words and it didn't matter which language he used, whether he used English, Japanese, any other language, and he froze it. And the crystals that formed on words like beautiful and love and gratitude and that kind of thing were beautiful. They were crystal clear and they formed beautifully, etc. The crystals that formed on hate and horrible words, anger and things like that, they didn't form so quite well. They formed misshapen and they were cloudy and they didn't create beautiful crystals. And that's just the power of your words. If you come to our house on our water filter, we've got love and gratitude written on it. And the most powerful, love was a beautiful crystal and gratitude was a beautiful crystal. The most amazing crystal was love and gratitude together. And we owned a restaurant. When I owned the restaurant, I got printed on the plates, love and gratitude. And I cannot tell you how wonderful it is to eat off those plates. I still got some of them at home.
That is wonderful.
Yeah.
That's a great idea.
That's how powerful words are. They carry everything as energy, including your words, including colors. And you see a color, you see that color because it's vibrating at a specific frequency. That's why it is that color to you. And interesting, nothing is the color that it is.
Yeah.
It reflects that color to you.
It's a reflection.
Yes. Yeah. And you see that color based on your frequency as well. So blue won't even be the same to all of us.
Yeah, that's really interesting. Also in the book, Tracy, you quote Carl Jung. Is it Jung or Un? I never know how to pronounce it. Carl Jung.
Yeah.
Jung.
I have no idea.
Yeah, and he states until you make the unconscious conscious, I've got my notes right here. Until you make the unconscious conscious, it will direct your life and you'll call it fate. So until you recognize some of your conscious beliefs, you don't really get the changes that you wanted to, that you would like to see. And gratitude, as you say in your book, is the number one, the most important, powerful method of manifesting intentions.
Yes.
And don't be attached to outcomes. That's interesting.
That's what we are currently learning. So when you put it out there, you must speak the language of the universe, which is frequency, and you must feel like you already have what you have and then not be attached to receiving it.
If
it can be any more complicated.
Yeah.
And finally, now I have full understanding of that. And the only way to have understanding of anything is to experience it. Mm-hmm. So we have been through 3 years of man. I feel like Job.
I know. It was so kind of you to share in the book. your personal experiences, which, you know, I mean, the book is for you, Tracy, it's everything. It's real. It's very real. This, everything that you're talking about.
Yeah. I turned around from morosely depressed to feeling like the sun was shining and it's always going to shine forever, literally bouncing around like an idiot in 2 days. And I thought, was I not really depressed? Was I pretending? Because how do you go over 2 days? And I thought, I can't figure this out. And I just just followed my heart. I'd gotten to a point where life sucked so badly that I had given up everything. I did not care. And so that was what I needed to be to just blindly follow. And what did I follow? I followed instinct because I had nothing else to go on. So I just followed an inner guidance.
Well, that brings me to the point that in the book, you say that we focus much more on our negative outcomes when we have many more positive outcomes than negative, but yet we always rush to those two little negative outcomes that are nagging us. And we put so much attention there, which is moving away from gratitude on the great things that are happening in your life. That was a great example.
Yeah, it's because we have the animal brain. So it's the amygdala. It's called the amygdala, and it's been associated with the ego, which we call it the conscious mind. Mm-hmm. And let's put it out there and say, you need your ego. It keeps you alive. Mm-hmm. It's not bad because there is nothing bad or good, but for the thinking that makes it so. So your ego is not bad, but just understand what your ego does for you and what the amygdala, the animal brain, does. Anything, we are computers and we collect data through our senses, through our eyes, touchy, taste, smell, whatever, hearing. And when it comes in, the brain then looks for patterns and it will then compute a pattern out to you and you'll go, that makes sense. Or you go, oh no, what does that mean? And then you've got to think a little bit about it and make some sense out of it. But it'll go through the amygdala first to look for whatever can cause you harm. Now, we seek and ye shall find. What we look to find, we will find. So if there's a hurricane warning, I see it on the news, and then I pick up my phone to go into my weather app to now look at how I can prepare for that hurricane and be prepared and survive it. What am I looking for? I'm looking for that hurricane coming to wipe me out. Mm-hmm. Why aren't you looking for the sunny skies?
Yeah, that's interesting.
Yes, none of us look for the sunny skies because it hasn't happened yet. It's the future.
Right.
And all possibilities of the future exist. And where do you create the future? Right in this present moment. And what future are you creating when you open up an app to look at the hurricane coming and how close it is to you and what you have to do to prepare for it coming? Why don't we look to prepare for the sunny skies?
Right.
We don't.
That's an interesting point, Tracy, because when we've been through a lot of fires here on the West Coast. And sometimes when you look at the ravages and the devastation, every once in a while, you'll see one house standing that wasn't touched. And you look at the devastation around it and you're thinking, how is that possible that this house isn't charred?
Anything is possible. For me to have cancer today and be completely gone tomorrow is absolutely possible. And how probable is it? It's probable based on how much you believe that it's possible.
Right.
And that's how probable it can become. But anything is possible. And so long as you start thinking that, I've started thinking, okay, anything's possible. So could I meet an alien tomorrow? I've started thinking about things that I used to think, oh, that's stupid. I've started thinking, is that possible? Oh, yes, that's possible. Then I think to myself, is that what I want? No. Okay. And then we move on. I just look at what is possible. And life has taken on a completely new meaning when I look at what's possible.
Yeah.
And when I've now gotten into my full power, oh man, I look at that every single day now. I look and I think, oh, you did that yesterday. Could you do this today? And I think, oh, wow.
Yes. You know, Tracy, we have evidence of that every day, don't we?
Yes.
Every day. Like when you think about somebody, you're thinking about, gee, I haven't heard from Julie in so long. And then 2 days later, she calls me.
Yes.
Or I run into her at the grocery store. So we do have evidence of our ability to manifest.
But we don't take cognizance of it.
We don't.
It's like when you see a meme, like all these people that we've quoted. Oh, that's lovely. And then we move on.
Right.
What's the missing step to seeing something that makes a lot of sense and then to it actually having an effect on our lives? Mm-hmm. And that's what I took with the law of creation. I thought, okay, it's going to affect my life or affect my life, whichever is the right word. It's going to have an effect on my life and the way I live my life. Mm-hmm. How do I do that? So there was the intelligent question. How do I implement this into my life? And then the stepping stones appear. Ask the question, and suddenly there's an answer. Yeah. Somebody gives you a book, or the meme comes along, or Siri gives you an advert that, you know.
Yeah, no, that's so true. That's so true.
You're open to recognizing when you have a sign that comes to you. They're there. They're there all day long.
Yes. Oh, that reminds me. I wanted to ask you something. I'm just going to go over my notes here. It was really interesting. Okay, let's see. Oh, this was really interesting about, so in the book, you go into the 18 laws of creation, which was, I never knew there were 18 laws of creation.
It's probably more.
probably more. We won't go into them here, but in the law of balance, you state in order to receive something, you must release something. And I wanted to ask you, is that release? That's like putting it out there in the universe, letting it go. Would that be allowing, or what?
It's more like letting go. So you must let go of what you want in order to get it. And that rang true to me so much, but I would understand it. And then the next moment, I couldn't make sense of it. Mm-hmm. It was so elusive, the understanding of it, that it's now I have the full understanding of it. But every single thing I ever needed to do, because I'm such a feel person, I can't often put it into words mm-hmm. until I processed the heck out of it.
Yeah.
Now, 3 years later, I can finally put stuff into words. My first interview, I didn't have so much to say because I felt a lot, but I didn't understand it mentally to be able to talk about it. And you have to let go of what it is that you want. So if I want freedom, I have to let go. And freedom is my top priority. If I want freedom, I must let go of what I want in order to be free of it. And then you attract it to you, because you can't have an attachment or hold on to something wanting it, because just that attachment proves that you don't have it.
Uh-huh.
And you need to be sending out the signal that you have everything your heart desires, so that you bring back the same things on that signal.
Yeah.
The universe answers you, and it will always hear you, and it will always answer you. And it doesn't say to you, hey, Tracy, are you sure you want some more experiences that are going to make you angry or sad or whatever? It doesn't say, are you sure? Last chance. It just hears you and it delivers.
Yeah.
Signal, it brings you whatever is matching your signal. And that's just, you've got to start understanding that. And to get a better signal, you have to be grateful. You can't know what you've got to be grateful for, because that's a mental process. It's like having a shopping list, but until you've gone out and bought and paid for your stuff and brought them home and put them into the pantry, you don't actually have them. Gratitude is the same way. You must buy and pay for your gratitude and unpack it and put it into your heart. Gratitude. You have to be it. You have to be vibrating at the level of gratitude.
It's everything.
Yeah.
It's everything. I thought it was, it really hit home to me when you said that wishing for something is actually just what you said. It's sort of a negative process. Because
it tells you don't have it. It's
right.
It's a focus on lack.
Yeah. It's a focus on lack.
On lack, you get what you focus on, because seek and you shall find. So what you're focusing on mm-hmm. is lack.
Yeah.
And we're so caught up in it that we say things. For me, the statement, oh, I'm sorry you're going through that. Don't be sorry. I'm not sorry. I'm very happy that you're going through that, because the universe is preparing you for whatever you want. Everything happens for a reason.
Right.
How can you be sorry anybody's going through anything when it's all happening for a reason and there's a divine plan to it?
Yeah.
So I try very hard. There will be instances where I will say sorry, because I know that that person is expecting to hear it. Like if I was late for our appointment, I'm sorry that I'm late for our appointment, because that will make you feel better. But everything happens for a reason. And I'm not about to put out the vibration of I'm sorry. So
yeah.
I'll try and say, thank you for waiting for me.
Mm-hmm.
Instead of saying, I'm sorry I'm late. So I just try and tweak it so that I'm looking in the right direction, not at the right vibration.
Yeah, towards the light.
Yes.
So the tools to, so one way to get into your own personal knowing, as you state in the book, is to get into meditation. And you and Steve have this really fun exercise at the very end of the book, which I absolutely loved. And it was going into a self hypnotic state or deep meditation and inviting in a guest. That's wonderful.
Stephen does that regularly, and he regularly has Nikola Tesla, Jesus, and a couple of other people, Einstein, I think he's chatted to. At the end of the day, if everything is energy, we're all energy. We're all the same. It's just different vibrational frequencies. Mm-hmm. And you can just tap into that frequency and talk to that person. By talking to them, it's not language. It's feeling again. So it's an intuitive process, and you are tapping into their frequency and therefore their knowledge and everything that goes with who they were and what they did when they were here. Mm-hmm. So he does that regularly. I will just go and connect with my higher self, which is the same thing. Mm-hmm. Because we are all one we're all the same.
So right.
Doing is you're just accessing, they call it the Akashic Records. And all that means is it's up in the sky, you can't see it. It's a frequency. You get there and you can understand all sorts of things. And that's where Stephen and I are now. It's like we don't learn lessons daily, we learn lessons hourly. I learn lessons from everything. It'll be there's signs everywhere. And you just connect, and suddenly things are coming in your mind. It feels like it sparks.
Yeah.
It just goes, whoa.
Yeah. It's true. It's true. And the oneness, you know, that's for some people, that's really hard to grasp because we have our individual bodies. Where are we connected on the oneness? And the oneness, you're saying we're connected in the divine order of oneness.
So how I first put it into words to make it understandable for myself, and it was very basic and very simple. We are all energy. So we're all just vibrating energy. So how are we any different?
Right.
Not. We're all just energy. And for me, that, and we can't be created and we can't be destroyed. So we're just all energy. So anything that exists is energy. So all that's happening is I'm seeing it as a tree, as grass and whatever, because of the observation effect. I've now put that photon or whatever it is into an observed position. And I now create a picture for my eyes to see.
That's perception, that part in the book where a photon or a particle being observed could, when it was observed, it could change its form.
Well, when it's observed, it chooses a position because it's
super chooses.
Yeah, it's in all different positions. And based on your frequency, what you're talking about, I mean, what you're feeling about, what you're talking about on a frequency level to the universe, you will then choose the position of that photon. And suddenly your reality develops. That's the observer effect. And so everything comes from you, and it comes from you based on how you respond to whatever you experience. So we experience stuff through our senses, and however you respond to that is based on what you will actually experience, what you will perceive, what you will see. So you've got to get into where you're vibrating, because we affect. If I don't even say a word and I come and stand next to you, you'll pick up on me. Mm-hmm. You will pick up on my presence, and I don't have to say a word, and you'll walk away and you'll think, that seemed like a strange person, or she seemed quite nice. I wish I'd said hello, or she seemed this way, or whatever. You're picking up on things you cannot see, and
right.
You're picking up on those all day long, because everything is energy, and you're picking up on it and you're giving it out to yourself.
Right. And just because we can't see it doesn't mean that it doesn't exist. Exactly. You know, because you can't see the air, you can't see gratitude, you can't see the physical properties and of even spirituality or divine oneness. And so if you can't see it, it doesn't exist. And that's.
And Steve said earlier that nothing you can actually see with your eyes does exist. And everything you cannot see with your eyes actually
exists. Yeah, that's really something.
That's a bit of a mind bender.
Yeah, yeah. The book is so, so great because it goes into detail. You also talk about measuring emotions. And I thought this was really interesting that pride is owned by the ego. We talked about the ego. It's a necessary aspect, but it's just our personality. We are not our egos. It's not who we are. Correct. And I think that the chemicals that you talked about, the chemicals that are released through emotions, are just as powerful. And some of the Nikola Tesla examples that you give in the book, like lavender, for example, the girls that are selling lavender have a much calmer state of being. Just, I mean, there's things that we can do to help ourselves.
And they didn't get sick. So
and they didn't get sick.
The plague, and the girls that were handing out lavender to people as a medicinal herb, they didn't catch the plague because of the properties of lavender.
Yeah.
So everything has, and that's why aromatherapy essential oils work. Each one has different properties. And if you're feeling, if you're wearing green, you'll be connected to the heart.
Heart chakra. Yeah.
And so even the colors that you wear can dictate your mood, because it's all stuff we can't see. It's all frequency. It's all the language of the universe, and you pick up on it. Mm-hmm. You are in tune with it. You're just not consciously in tune with it.
Right.
And in order to become consciously in tune with it, you've got to rise above your animal brain, your ego, for a higher level of consciousness to understand more than your ego can understand.
Mm-hmm. Because the ego doesn't really understand anything but survival.
Correct. It doesn't even understand love. It understands,
right.
It understands love as in love hurts.
Love for itself only.
Yes, love for itself. So survival, love for yourself, and love hurts. So only the ego can get hurt. So if you're hurt, you're in your ego.
Right.
If you're not in your ego, you're not going to be hurt.
Because I understand.
Why would you hurt yourself? You hurt yourself. Everything comes from within.
So yeah.
All pain, all anger, all everything that we can do this to somebody else or anything else, you're doing it to yourself, and that's victim mode. And mm-hmm. the only way to get out of victim mode is to stop hurting yourself.
Mm-hmm.
But we won't do that because we need to blame somebody to feel better.
That's exactly right. But you say the same thing about forgiveness, you know, as far as even cosmic intelligence. You know, if you're really forgiving somebody, who you're really releasing yourself from your own prison. It's got nothing to do with the person.
So I was sexually abused by my father, and I had never spoke a word to him. I didn't see him or anything for most of 30 years, and for 20 years, I never even saw him or spoke one word with him. And in 2020, when I was becoming this new person, I would check in because I wanted proof as well. I'm a human being. Okay, prove to me that I'm on the right path, that it's all happening. And so I would ask intelligent questions, and I'd say, okay, what is this new version of myself? Because there's like 25 million. Stephen says I got 17 different personalities and one likes him. But I would ask questions and I'd get an answer. So there was like a whole conversation going on. And I said, what does this new version that I'm becoming look like in the future? And one of the voices said, she has a relationship with her father. And I thought, oh, well, there you go. I've used up all the wisdom with these voices. I need new ones. I said, no. And then sometime later, I asked again, so what does this person look like? You'll have a relationship with your father. Oh, freaking hell, no.
Yeah.
Eventually, I said, okay. And I went and I looked up for him and I found him. And then we started conversing. And my first thought was, oh, he hasn't changed. This man's still the same, blah, blah, blah. And eventually today, cut a long story short, I have such a wonderful relationship with him. It's online by email. We haven't seen each other, which I don't think we will, because how can you? It's really difficult for him. Because I've achieved something that most people look at me and they go, huh? We can understand forgiveness, but do you still need to have him in your life? That we can't understand.
Yeah.
And so I've done a lot of thinking and questioning. What is it? What is it that I actually did? And if everything comes from us, so does the sexual abuse I experienced.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Very hard to get your head around.
Mm-hmm.
But the reason it's hard to get your head around is because you're using your eyes to understand.
Yeah.
When you close these and use this to understand, it becomes a different ball game and a completely different story to tell yourself.
Mm-hmm.
And when I could understand that how I responded to that is how I perceive everything that went down. And I started to just address that and work with it, et cetera. And that was my second book. My second book was dedicated to my dad, We're Learning to Fly. And it was because he helped teach me forgiveness.
Mm-hmm.
And it wasn't forgiveness as in, oh, I forgive you for doing something wrong to me. It was forgiveness that made me feel like there was nothing to forgive in the first place. And that liberated me.
Yeah.
It made me so free that I stopped even wondering whether it was the right thing or how I did it or anything like that. I was just so grateful to have that gone.
Right.
I no longer felt. It turns out that I used to carry around guilt. I used to carry around shame. Mm-hmm. I used to carry around wrongness. Mm-hmm. And that's another story.
Yeah.
And I used to carry around a whole bunch of things all on that low vibration. Now, shame is the lowest vibrational frequency. It's just so awful to be there. And that's what I'd carried around. That was the baggage I was carrying around.
Right. That was your prison.
Yes, only I can let it go and only I can put it down. So when you forgive somebody, you let go of that baggage you've been carrying around, and it's the best gift you give yourself.
It really is.
Do it again.
Yeah. You know, the forgiveness is really interesting because it is the gift of freedom. But that's probably the hardest forgiveness, I think, is probably the hardest one, especially one from a sexual abuse. And the reason I think that the way that I understand forgiveness finally, because I've been like you, I've been asking how can you forgive really fully, completely? And if you understand that you're not your ego, you know, that actions taken, that aren't of love and light or from the ego, and we're not our egos. That was a biggie.
Yeah.
That was a great big one.
The day, the understanding that we are one is what helped me forgive. So where I understood we were one, and I thought, okay, and we are one with our higher source, our higher power, with God, whatever you think it is, we are one with him. It is also just energy, and we're just energy. So where's the difference? And so it's a whole bunch of information that you got to put together for yourself, and it'll look different in your head than it will in mine.
Mm-hmm.
Make our own understanding based on the color glasses we've got on, and your color glasses are the experiences you've had in your life. So everybody's journey is different and unique to themselves. And so you got to make sense of that oneness. And the moment I could recognize that my father was my reflection, and what was he telling about me, about myself? I was carrying around guilt. I was carrying around shame, etc. And the moment I could understand that and let that go, I was free.
Yeah, you did. You did say by monitoring our thoughts, we can make, we can create positively instead of destructively. That's fantastic, Tracy. This book is so amazing. I know the amount of work that you guys put into it and the years. And I just love it. I just thank you so much for being here today. There's so much more. We could go on.
So much more. I can talk for
air. I know. I love it. I love it. But, you know, we are not human beings on a spiritual journey. We are spiritual beings on a human journey.
And you have to understand that, because that's a little secret into who you actually are. You're not. You came here and you took human form. We didn't come. We've lost our concept of who we actually are, because we didn't come here to pretend to be humans, because you're not really going to have a human experience if you're pretending. We came here and we are human, but you have to remember who you really are.
Yeah.
Who are you really?
Who are you really?
Being.
Know thyself.
Yes.
To know thyself.
You cannot get anywhere if you do not know thyself. And that's why I'm now doing the course on I Am. Know thyself, because that's the journey. That's why we're here.
That's why we're here.
Point. Yes.
This is fantastic. You can thank you so much, Tracy. You can reach Steve and Tracy at steveandtracywebster.com. Where you can download the book. You can look at all the other programs that you offer. I mean, there's a plethora of fabulous things on that website. The book is called Law of Creation. It's available on Amazon, BarnesandNoble.com. And thank you so much. I appreciate it. We're going to circle back.
Okie dokie.
You can reach us at info@uequalsme.org. Our website is uequalsme.org. And visit our Etsy store for merch or logo wear for the You Equals Me Foundation. That's You Equals Me Etsy store, all one word in your Google search. And also check out our podcast with Sergei Kovalenkov and donate to help him build refugee shelters for his fellow Ukrainians who've lost everything. But hope. We have that also on our You Equals Me website. And if you could help us raise money for this humanitarian, and please, if you like this podcast, this YouTube, please like it, subscribe, share. This is really great information. Tracy, I can't wait to see you again.
Me too. Thank you very much, Zen. It was wonderful being here.
Thank you. Go and love and bring in light.
Yes, you too.
Thank you.